Well, I didn't see the beginning of your lecture, but maybe you did say something about how you got started.
I didn't say much. I didn't say all that much. I went a little bit too fast. My background is in computer science and humanities. If you went the whole deal, I've got double degrees in computer science and humanities. And actually, my mother was an art and English teacher. My father was a walking, talking, breathing computer. So I started programming when I was 14. And actually,
how old are you now?
Take a guess.
Young. 25? 26? 27.
Come on, I don't look that young.
It's hard to guess for me.
I know. No, my grandfather was a professional photographer. He started to teach me photography when I was literally six. And I started working in a darkroom when I was about 12. And started programming computers when I was 14. I thought I wanted to be an electrical engineer and changed my mind. And finally ended up with double degrees in humanities and computer science. Then I went to Chicago to the Institute of Design to study digital photography. And while I was there, the SIGGRAPH show was in Chicago in 92, which is the last year I was finishing up my thesis. And I was asked to become an ISDN guru. So they wanted to work with telecommunications art, telematics art. And ISDN was just being released, and nobody had any idea what it was and any idea how to work with it. So I actually met with the American director of the ISDN commission, and I actually went to Bell Labs and learned all about ISDN, found out what ISDN was. And then for the SIGGRAPH show, we basically built a telephone company in the middle of the SIGGRAPH show floor. We ran fiber optic cable right into the exhibition center, and we set up the first working ISDN, international ISDN network outside of Phone Lab, with Kit Galloway and the Electronic Cafe and a couple of other projects. But we built this whole network running between Toronto, Tokyo, San Francisco, Chicago, Paris. And 92 was the year that everybody thought how wonderful it would be to paint together. So we had all these interactive painting programs. And I kept saying, gee, guys, I know if painting together was such a great idea, why haven't people been painting together for thousands of years? You can both go up to the canvas at the same time. Do you have any idea how boring it is to watch somebody paint, especially if they're on the other side of the country and it's with a lag? He said, "I'll be back in half an hour. Let's go get a coffee."
So touching was another challenge.
No, that was my introduction to network arts, and immediately I realized that this is art, if you want to use the term, that's all about the technology itself. There are very few people looking at it as a tool. They're getting caught up in the technology of making the connection. I had been working for several years looking at the relationship between the human body and technology. And I'd been doing it as a photographer and taking photographs and using different digital techniques to enhance the photographs and try to create a photograph which showed a person as they were being transformed through technology. So I showed a couple of the images earlier to show it's much easier to show visually than to really explain.
Where's this interest in the human body originating?
That's always been there. That's what this is all about, is the human body, and where the human body exists in technology, and what becomes of the human body through technology. I actually knew a person in Chicago who had been programming since he was very young. His whole right hand was completely deformed to fit a Macintosh mouse. He would lay his hand on the table, and the mouse fit perfectly underneath his hands. The bones themselves had warped themselves around the mouse. He'd spent so much time, and that, obviously, the human body is very flexible and is built to adapt to its environment.
So you're saying that people that work, like you, that work with computers from a very young age, are destined to be interested in the body?
I think sooner or later we're all going to realize that our technology is destroying our bodies. And it's going a couple different directions. If you look at cyberpunk, people say technology, the body is standing in the way of technology. Technology has to progress, so we have to get rid of the body. And that's where all the notions of digitizing yourself, feeding yourself into the network, shedding the meat, and also coming from. I'm of the other viewpoint that if technology is destroying our bodies, then we have to change technology.
And that's what you attempted to do with this project?
I'm one person working as a media artist. I'm not going to change technology, but I can show that things don't have to be that way. fact, I gave a lecture at a very hardcore virtual reality symposium with people from Brown University and all these other universities. They hated me.
Why?
Because I said virtual reality is simulation. Virtual reality has nothing to do with the head-mounted display. It has nothing to do with the data glove. And there are a lot of people who say if it doesn't have a head-mounted display, if it doesn't have a data glove, then it's not VR. And that's when I first heard the term augmented reality. Now they're even making a separation between VR, or virtual reality, which is where you climb into a world of complete simulation, and augmented reality, which is what they keep saying I'm doing, which is where you overlap a virtual world on top of the physical world. So their most basic example of an augmented reality is a fighter pilot who's looking out his cockpit and seeing heads-up display mounted on top of it. But it's an engineer's mindset that there is one answer. There can't be multiple answers simultaneously. The training that people go through to become an engineer, to become a technician, does not allow them to handle...
Finesse?
No, they can't handle gray areas. Things have to be black and white. And
isn't that finesse or art?
Oh, God. I've been speaking German too long. No,
but,
there is...
But
yes, we're saying the same thing. It's just there's a very specific term for it.
But earlier on, from the audience, there was a question about your S&M project, or about touch in general via your system, how it feels actually, and how it's done, how it's felt. And you said that only that there is no finesse possible.
Yeah, well, that's so. If you start viewing the human body as a piece of technology, we're centuries ahead of where our computer technology is today. There's a lot of research being done on tactile feedback systems. And basically what they prove is what an incredible piece of machinery the human body is, that we're nowhere near being able to synthesize the amount of information that we can pass simply by dragging your hand across a tabletop, for instance. If you've got about, I'm not even going to start spouting off the numbers, but just from the pure amount of information that we take in through our senses, there's no computer even conceived of today that can handle that. And people, a lot of psychologists are beginning to realize that even our own brain doesn't use all that information, that it looks for different patterns in the information, looks for changes in the information. It doesn't actually read all of that. And the way most of our computers work right now is that it's trying to read all that information. But no, what I was saying...
It doesn't give value to the different information.
That's okay. I'm a computer scientist. I'm not an electrical engineer, or I'm trained as a computer scientist. There is a world of difference between what computer scientists try to do and what electrical engineers try to do. Most engineers think that all of the problems can be solved with more hardware. If we just make it faster, if we just make it smaller, then that'll solve all the problems. And computer scientists are beginning to realize, actually, they realized for a long time that, you know, the hardware is the easy thing. We can... Now, you want this computer to run 10 times faster? Wait 3 years. It'll run 10 times faster. But to try to add some intelligence into the program, to try to develop a new form of thinking for the program is much, much more difficult.
But do you also work on the wetware side?
The wetware side?
The human side.
I am a human being. Actually,
I was thinking that because of... when I saw this part, the video on the belt, you know, where people feel a wind when they approach each other, a new kind of experience, how do you say that, evolved, started. It's not the way a blind person feels. It's not something that was here before. You actually created something. A way to experience another person that is new, completely new.
Yeah, that's actually delving into a lot of different thoughts that I have, in different ways I think. One of my main philosophies is that I don't want to override the human senses. I never want to plug a computer directly into my brain. I never want to bypass the body. I want to figure out ways of using the senses Computers are very good at dealing with abstract information. That's what they're built to deal with. But our senses are designed to deal with the physical world. So what I'm trying to do is to create some form of interface between the two, to feed this abstract information from the computer through the senses into the human body. And that's why the whole system was designed with the belts, was to use the sense of touch, to use an area of the body which people don't usually concentrate on, to feed this information instead of people looking at the screen. And the reason I used wind specifically is because I wanted to give the idea of perceiving something through physical, perceiving something tangibly, which was intangible. So if this other person is not physically there, I didn't want you to feel a vibration or a pulse, because you'd only feel a vibration or pulse if he was actually there. But wind is something we feel all the time, but you can't reach out and touch it. So that's why I decided to actually work with wind itself. And wind is a nightmare to try to work with. Yeah, I won't even start on the technical problems dealing with it.
But the first project, the S&M project that you did, you said you were a little bit ashamed about it?
No, I was angry at the way the media warped it and twisted it. They immediately started pushing it as this big economic project and claiming that we were supposed to be marketing these things and trying to sell these as so and such and such. And that was all a lie. I've had a couple of big fights with my former partner, Lutz Dahlstensley, the person I did this project with. And that was one of the problems, was the direction that he wanted to go with, the direction that I wanted to go with it. But, for me, it was always done, first of all, as an experiment in touch over network. But it should have always been done with a sense of humor, a little bit. No, it was very much done tongue-in-cheek, at least from my point of view.
Tongue-in-cheek?
Yes. To simply tell people, look, you're being ridiculous. You're all taking this far too seriously, and you're all completely forgetting about the body. And I wanted to bring the body back into communications and bring the physical body. To quote Stellark, I wanted to bring the body back.
That's a hard way to do through porn, but because then you are immediately pushed aside into the corner of cheap sex, right?
That's the problem, is that once you start to deal with touch, you're immediately drawn into that. And that's why I showed this video, because most people can't make that separation. They can't make a separation. All touch has an erotic component. But just because I reach out and touch you on the shoulder doesn't mean that I want to go to bed with you. Mm. Now, there are grayscales. Most people don't see those grayscales. In fact, that's all cultural. In our culture, we say, okay, I don't know you. I'm allowed to touch you on the knee. I'm allowed to touch you on the shoulder. Maybe I can touch you on the hand. Possibly, if I start running my fingers through your hair, then you're going to start thinking something else. If I start caressing your buttocks, then I've gone too far. But where does that line come? We'd all agree that if I reach out and grab your breast, that's not right. But why? And it's the same touch, it's just in different places. Okay, the breast, no, that's a sexual area. Okay, but lower back. There's nothing sexual about the lower back any more so than the shoulders. But
why didn't you, for instance, when I heard this, about this, when I read the V2 program and your project was mentioned in it, I didn't think about sex at all. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until I brought my daughter away to the babysitter that the babysitter said, oh, porn. You know, I thought more of combat, things like that.
Combat? How so?
Well, because most of the virtual reality things are designed for the army, mm-hmm. and designed by NASA. Huh?
Yeah,
so also this project, I thought it would be for a military use.
No, I'm glad to hear you say that, because most people are not willing to admit that virtual reality technology, that's military technology. In fact, most of our computer technology is military technology. It was designed for a very, very specific reason. And that, for me, I'm a U.S. Army paratrooper. I went through my undergraduate on an Army scholarship, and I used to jump out of airplanes in the middle of the night. I was in Army intelligence, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that's something that's very, very, very important to me, is to remember that there is this connection between the military. And personally, I have very, very mixed emotions about what's going on in the U.S. right now. That there's a lot of defense funding is being cut. So a lot of these defense contractors who have built all these things specifically for the military are now trying to find other uses for their technology. I have mixed emotions because I have a lot of friends. In fact, my father is also a defense contractor. So I see them being put out of work because of these cuts. But I also see some very interesting... we talk in the U.S. there's a term, dual-use contracts. So the idea that the government doesn't want to fund any more projects specifically for or only for military uses. They're trying to find projects which will be developed for military use, but then can also be applied to more humanistic uses. One of the most famous of those is a telerobotics, a teleoperation project, which is being done by the U.S. Army.
We do not have to be paranoid anymore about...
We always have to be. You better be damn paranoid about what your government's doing. Especially the military, especially the intelligence community, because nobody's allowed to check up on what they're doing.
But what you developed, is that a completely new thing? Did you develop some completely new software, some completely new hardware?
Can it
be used in a dangerous way?
Absolutely. I can tell you exactly how it could be used. In fact, I've been thinking about writing a book about it. If you know how to use it, there are books written about how to build a bomb out of a newspaper. It's really very easy to do. If your mind is bent on destruction, you can destroy. It's trivial.
That's what I thought when I saw your video. Mm-hmm. Is there a security thing in it that the other person cannot go too far with you?
There should have been. You're talking about the S&M suits. This whole project was done on a very low budget and in a ridiculously short amount of time. I won't even tell you how fast we built these things. But there was supposed to be a panic button, so that all you had to do is hit a button and it disconnected all the current from the whole suit. There should have been, because there was a problem in the software at one point that you could overload the system and then the suit would actually sit there and keep playing out impulses for up to 2 minutes. The person would just stand there and would, and you'd have to wait. The only other thing I could do would be to reset the whole computer. It was faster just to let it play out, but that was a bug in the first software. All these projects were just experiments.
But a maniac could make a killing machine out of it.
To kill with that, you'd have to put somebody in a puddle of water, ground them, and then hit them with the electric shock. It can be painful, though. It wasn't built the way it was supposed to be built. It delivers a lot of electric shock, but it also delivers a lot of amperage. And the human body can take over 90,000 volts of shock at very, very low wattage, at very low amperage. This has too much amperage. So this is more than enough to contract the muscles. In fact, after using it for about 2 minutes, your arm will start twitching involuntarily. It's real hardcore. But it's very strange that we showed it at the Planet Sex Ball in London last April to some real hardcore S&M practitioners. And they said it wasn't hardcore enough. They wanted more. They wanted it to be more painful. But they had a very good point. They said that it should be more precision, more precise, it should be more pinpoint, that it was covering too large an area, and they wanted to focus on very specific areas. But again, that's all an issue of who was this designed for, who was the audience. I personally don't think this is very hardcore at all. I personally think it has nothing to do with sex. I don't find it the least bit erotic. There are two or three images that I found erotic. But I was chased for creating pornography, and I looked at these images and said, these aren't pornographic, you should see some of my photography. But that's something else.
What are you working on now?
I told everybody what I was working on right now.
Tell it to me in the microphone.
No, the Belt Project was just the first level of a larger installation, which I've been working on for about a year now. And the whole installation is actually creating a new form of virtual environment. and trying to take a lot of cyberpunk philosophy, trying to take the cyberspace, the notion of cyberspace, and plug it into a more classical notion of construction of the world, construction of the universe, so that you have two completely separated, two spaces which are separated in the physical world, but they're tied together in the cyber world. In computer science, we call this a distributed environment, or a virtual environment, which is shared by multiple participants, blah, blah, blah. Anyhow, what this one does is that if you step into this environment, there is a computer system which is tracking you, and there's actually a particle dynamic system, a cellular automata system, which is running through the computer the whole time. So if you step into the space, you're existing simultaneously in the physical world and in the cyber world, and you're not supposed to be able to do that, so you become a form of turbulence. So in the physical world, you perceive this turbulence as the wind. It's the most wind. Wind is turbulence. But also in the computer itself, you become a form of turbulence inside this particle dynamic system, and the turbulence starts streaming off of your body. So if you look down at the ground, you see what look like flames streaming off of your feet. And as you walk back and forth, these flames follow you. They're always in the same location to you in relationship to your body, because your body has actually become a... your body is actually interrupting the flow inside this computer. And simultaneously, you can see another... what looks like another set of flames moving around the space, which is the other person in the other space. And through the belt, you can feel this other person. But occasionally, something else moves through the space, swims through the space, which are my ghosts, which also inhabit the space. And you can see them, but you can't feel them. So I'm trying to... I won't say exactly what I'm trying to do with it, but... so there are two different objects which you perceive visually the same, but you can only feel one of them. And even that feeling is slightly distant from... it's a tactile feeling, but it's distant from indirect physical contact. And that's just been working, like I said, for a couple of days now. I have a lot of programming to do to try to speed it up so it can run on... I'm trying to get everything to work on computers that a human being can afford. A computer that costs less than your house would be my idea of a computer. But that's another... I'm working in Germany. I'm working at the Consortium for Media, one of the... I think it is the most highly financed media school in all the world. The amount of equipment there is ridiculous. And what ends up happening is that when the students come into the school, they are overwhelmed by the equipment, and they start making work which is centered on the equipment. And everybody goes through this phase. They become enamored with the technology, and it usually takes... hopefully it only takes a couple years to get out of that. But they're actually... we end up doing a disservice to the students, because the students come in and they get all the free time they want on a Harry. A Harry's a $3 million mark workstation. If you've been working for a year and a half on a Harry, you leave the school, you don't want to go start playing with a Macintosh. So basically they're forcing people to go to work for the television stations, because they're the only people who can afford the equipment that they're used to working with. So what's happening with school is students are graduating, but they don't want to leave. So they're actually sneaking into labs in the middle of the night. So it's a difficult situation.
Harry is addictive.
Harry is very addictive. Uh-huh. And
what other interests do you have besides computering?
What besides what?
Computering.
Computering. Living.
What do you read? What artists do you admire in this field?
Yes, well, I have a very obsessive personality, so when I get into something, when I get into a project, there's a habit of taking over everything else. But, actually, theoretically, I'm a photographer. I remember spending years and years studying photography, and don't take many photographs anymore. No, but I used to dance a lot, until I injured my back, so I can't dance anymore. I used to do a lot of biking. Right now, I spend far too much time sitting in front of a computer. It's a real shame. I tried to read, but this kind of work takes too much time and energy.
Well, thank you very much for the interview.